It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Coming up on episode number 89 of Sports Day Plus. At 6:45, where are we at in society? I have stories of a criminal named D's Nuts, seriously, overweight airplane passengers, and some possible propaganda involving big chocolate. Or should I say chocaganda? No, I shouldn't say that. At 6:30, our sports roundup includes the NCAA potentially facing a massive fine as a result of numerous antitrust lawsuits. It's only a matter of time before they're out of college football and perhaps college sports altogether. And in mere minutes, it is the first of my two-segment chat with the legendary Tony Hawk. I am your host, Trey Elling. You can give me a follow on Twitter, at Courtesy Wave, and do the same for ESPN Austin at 1027 ESPN. Tony Hawk is maybe the most well-known skateboarder on the planet, who has been shredding ramps and parks and elsewhere for more than 45 years now. Over that 45-plus years, he has become one of those most recognizable names, first as a skater, then as a video game character, and now in his mid-50s as maybe the most important ambassador for the activity itself. And he's bringing his story, along with the stories of a fellow legendary skateboarder, to Austin at ACL Live at the Moody Theater this Sunday night at 7 p.m., The show is titled Dark Slides and Secret Tapes, An Evening with Tony Hawk and Rodney Mullen. You can go to aclive.com to snag tickets. And Tony now joins me to talk about that and a whole lot more. Tony, thank you so much for the time. How are you doing today?
Good morning.
Yeah, good morning to you as well. We were just lamenting before hitting record that we each have to take care of getting our kids up and out of the house and to school on most weekdays, and some days, I'm never going to call it easy, but some days are a little bit less difficult than others.
Yes, and yeah, my schedule is dictated by hers for sure, but she's almost driving, so pretty soon it's going to be on her to get up and out and to all of the other extracurricular activities.
Sure. Yeah, I've got 9 and 7 right now. You've got a bunch of different kids. The oldest may be early 30s. All the way down to 15. Yeah. Does it get easier once they get to adolescence and adulthood?
Wow, that's no. That's the short answer. They just need more complicated stuff when they get older.
Gotcha.
They need you to help with, you know, paperwork and home loans and bigger advice. So that it gets more complicated, but yes, it gets easier in the sense that for the most part, they are self-sufficient.
So you may not remember this, but this is yours and my second time to talk. The first time was at South by Southwest 2 years ago. You and Sam Jones were premiering the exceptional documentary on your life. And I will always remember that because I watched one of the most physically impressive things pulled off that I will ever witness. And it had to do with you, but it had nothing to do with the skateboard, or I guess passively had to do with the skateboard because it was about the documentary. You had broken your femur like 4 or 5 days before. And there were questions as to whether you were even going to be showing up. Not only did you show up, you were on crutches. You insisted on passing the crutches off while you were doing interviews too. My mind was blown. I was the guy that congratulated you on your middle name officially involving the F word going forward. You had reached that level by pulling something off so incredible. Unfortunately, in researching for this conversation, I came to learn that that was at the defiance of doctor's orders. 8 months later, you realized things hadn't healed up properly and you had to go in for another surgery. Is that injury healed up like it should have now since we're 2 years removed from the injury itself?
Yeah, for the most part, I'm still dealing with some residual effects of it in terms of my limitations when I skate, but they're nuanced, you know, they're more just from things that I noticed that no one else would notice in terms of my, like how far I can get, how much I can crouch and sort of squat and things like that. But that was going to come with age anyway. I just accelerated the process by breaking my leg, but it wasn't South by Southwest that set me on the wrong trajectory. It was more when I got back from South by Southwest, I started skating immediately, and that was the wrong decision.
Yeah, because I remember you talking about wanting to get to an event in Vegas in April, which was a month away. Yeah. And so did you make that event to the detriment of your long-term
health?
That event
actually got canceled, not because of my injury, but because of other issues. But that wasn't stopping my my motivations, and it should have. Let's just put it this way. In hindsight, I should have known better.
I'm really excited that you're bringing Dark Slides and Secret Tapes, an evening with Tony Hawk and Rodney Mullen, to Austin. It's this Sunday, April 7th at 7 p.m. As far as I know, there's only two shows that are scheduled right now. Maybe that's going to expand at some point in the future. So what can people expect if they show up at the Moody Center on Sunday night to hear you and Rodney talk?
Well, it's a collaborative talk. We've never done anything like this before, where he and I are taking turns telling our stories and giving the parallels to our lives and our journeys. And it's interesting because he and I both grew up skiing at the same time, but on different ends of the opposite coasts, and both felt like we were outsiders in an outsider sport, but found camaraderie within each other and found inspiration within each other. And it's been like that ever since. I mean, it's kind of shocking how our lives have gone in the same way, even though we didn't really hang out a whole lot. We definitely always had a kindred spirit, but even down to, like, I broke my leg and a year later, Rodney had double hip replacement. And so we were both on the road to recovery at the same time, just by happenstance. But Rodney is fascinating. And I mean, he really is the godfather of modern skateboarding, in terms of, he's the guy that created the kickflip. He's the guy that figured out how to ollie with your board off the ground. And all along, he was doing that by himself with no accolades at the time. And, you know, I was doing my own version of that, skating pools and ramps where no one was really paying attention. But at the same time, we both felt this drive to keep trying, keep getting better, even when we were competing and doing well.
You talked about the community, which for me, as somebody who may have tried skateboarding for a small amount of time when I was a kid, has always found myself fascinated by the community. I mean, that was really accelerated, I guess, for a lot of the general public with the X Games and just watching everybody root for everybody else, which at the time was a foreign concept, certainly in American sports. I'm not sure how it was around the rest of the world, although thinking about soccer hooligans, that's probably not always the case either. What is it about the skateboarding community that makes that group so special?
I think it's the idea that, well, first of all, especially in our days, you had to be somewhat of a rebel to even choose skateboarding, because it was not cool. And it was largely largely made fun of by the sort of mainstream crew. And it was almost like if you chose a skateboard, especially in the early 80s, the narrative was, how could you keep skating? Like, why haven't you grown out of this? Aren't you too old for that? There were so few places to skate that you had to sort of create your own spaces, and you had to figure out how to use the landscape, like the urban landscape and the street areas to make it your own skate park. So there's this strong bond between skaters, because they've already felt like they were pushed aside. And so they had to band together. But also there's a mindset in terms of doing it your own way, doing your own thing, but also being part of a community. I mean, most other sports rely on teamwork for success. And in skateboarding, it's more based on, what are the challenges you put forth for yourself and how do you overcome them? And there'll be a whole group of people that will support you in that, but they're not competing against you. And I think that's the difference.
He is the legendary Tony Hawk. He is going to be here in Austin this Sunday night at ACL Live at the Moody Theater for a show called Dark Slides and Secret Tapes, an evening with Tony Hawk and Rodney Mullen. Go to ACLLive.com now to snag tickets. Coming up, one more segment with Tony Hawk on the other side.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Back with legendary skateboarder Tony Hawk. You not only know him from those skateboarding skills in the 1980s, but he was one of the main forces behind skateboarding's gain in popularity with the X Games in the 90s and the 2000s. He is the guy that the video game was created after, Tony Hawk Pro Skater. And in modern times, even in his mid-50s, not only is he still shredding, but he's also maybe the most important ambassador for this activity. And Tony is actually going to be here in Austin this Sunday at ACL Live at the Moody Theater, along with another legendary skateboarder. The show is called Dark Slides and Secret Tapes, an evening with Tony Hawk and Rodney Mullen. Again, Sunday at 7 p.m. You can get tickets right now by going to that ACL Live website. That is ACLLive.com. It is going to be a lot of fun. They're going to talk about highlights from their career and some things that maybe haven't been mentioned in the public sphere before. And Austin is only one of two places to actually get this show as of right now. The other is the Beacon Theater in New York. So you definitely do not want to miss it. This Sunday, ACLLive.com. Tony, there have been different moments throughout time that have really helped to advance skateboarding culture. Your video game, obviously a part of that, the X Games. But one of the first real pop culture events to advance skateboarding was Back to the Future back in the mid-1980s.
True, yes.
Back to the Future 2 happened as well, which had a bunch of cool future inventions, including that hoverboard, which I don't think we have a prototype for just yet. Has anybody approached you with an idea for a hoverboard? And do you think that's something we'll see in our lifetime?
I have ridden a hoverboard. It is nothing like what you think of in Back to the Future. It was much larger. It was much louder. You had to ride above a specific type of surface. And it was very hard to control. So it was more like I was along for the ride on a board that just chose to start spinning when I didn't want it to. But that was a while ago. That was almost 10 years ago. So I do feel like the technology is moving ahead. It's just not cost effective yet.
Yeah.
And it's definitely not what you think of when you think of that movie. I will tell you though, that I recently bought one of the hoverboards from the movie, that was one of the props. So I do have a hoverboard from Back to the Future. It's just a piece of plastic.
How much did that cost you?
Enough. Let's just say I would not be outbid on it.
Gotcha. So as far as the X Games are concerned, I've heard, by the way, skateboarding writing is as beautiful as the art form itself in a lot of ways. And I think that's because you have a lot of introspective people who have interesting things to say, and they do that best by writing it down. But I've seen criticisms at times from skateboarding purists, let's call them. And by the way, purists with any activity, they can make some good points, but it tends to be a miserable lot as well. I've heard skateboarding purists say that in a way the X Games hurt the pure art form of skateboarding. As somebody who is obviously an instrumental part of the X Games, do you understand where they're coming from with that?
I think that their complaint is more that suddenly skateboarding was grouped together with all these other so-called extreme sports. And we always felt like we chose to skate because it set us apart, because yeah. It was something different. And then suddenly you're grouped into all these sort of fringe activities. But at the same time, if you look a little deeper than that, skating is its own thing. And it definitely has shined through the X Games, especially from the early days X Games, when it was like rock climbing and bungee jumping and sky surfing and all these random other sports that all fell by the wayside. In terms of being included in that. And so, but at the same time, the ESPN did not create competition within our sports. I've been competing since I was 10 years old. So I think that's the misperception of all this, is that somehow X Games or even Olympics are the ones who have started the competition idea of what we do. That's just patently false. We've been competing forever, and now it just happens to be on TV. And it just happens to be on an international stage.
A lot of those same writers do a great job of pointing out how skateboarding is such an excellent metaphor for life. Why do you love skateboarding as a metaphor for life, Tony?
It teaches you the value of perseverance and following through And it's, I mean, there's never a better metaphor in life than to fail and keep trying. Get back up, try again. Don't give up. I mean, that's it. That's what skateboarding is about, not giving up.
Yeah. You have five kids. I have two, though most of yours are grown now, as we talked about previously. Parenting is always a challenge. What do you think the biggest challenge is for most parents in 2024 with all the crazy stuff that's come about in the last 5+ years?
I think it's social media, just communication in general. Yeah. You know, obviously I love that I can communicate with my kids in real time. I don't have to hope that they're home and by the phone. But you know, when you're talking about like all our boys, we have five boys, they're all grown and on their own. And then our daughter's 15, she's still at home, but the influence of social media, the pressure of it is intense. And so the best thing you can do as a parent is just to give them a break from it, or try to explain how it's not the most important thing. And the opinions are definitely ones you need to ignore.
And a lot of times the opinions aren't even human. The opinions are literally coming from things like chatbots. So yeah,
sure,
more of a reason kind of to take too. Anything and, that you read on there with a grain of salt.
Of course. And I think that luckily they have me as an example that I grew up with that sort of bullying, but face to face. And then some, you know, eventually it became something that was online, but I was able to ignore it and learn to ignore it in a way that was healthy. And so once it came to social media, that was even easier to ignore because it was more anonymous. It wasn't someone getting in my face and telling me that, that what I do is wrong. So I think that they see me, hopefully that I'm an example to them. And that they know that they just have to take it to all, like you said, with a grain of salt. It's all nonsense.
So you have obviously traveled all over the world for your job, but you have admitted in previous interviews that you didn't initially have much of a travel bug. You're just a naive kid from Southern California. That's obviously changed over time because you've also talked about taking your kids on trips with you when they were younger and how important that was for them to just let them see other parts of the world, experience new cultures. Was there a trip or a specific place for you that really flipped the script with regards to how you felt about travel and just the importance of it all?
That's a good question. I think that when I started going on trips that were more charity focused and there was no skating, I think that's what allowed me to really open up my eyes and appreciate other cultures and also just the challenges of other countries and different places. I mean, I was always just so, when I was young, I was fixated on skating. Where is the skate park? Where are we going? And everything else was incidental, including sightseeing. But then I went on a couple of trips to places like Africa, even Cambodia, and really saw a much broader worldview and was able to, I mean, sometimes be the one that showed them their first skateboard and took them on rides for it. Not that I was, you know, not that that was the motivating factor, but it was really fun for me to be able to show them this version of what could be fun. And once I had experienced all that and come home, you know, I thought it was important to expose my kids to all of the different cultures as much as possible. And you know, they've gone on trips with us. They've helped to fit people with hearing aids that couldn't afford them. They've helped to teach kids in Africa to skate. And I'm really proud of them for embracing those opportunities.
Is that through your nonprofit, the Skateboard Project?
The skate park project, yeah, but also in connection with Skatistan, which is the international. They provide education and skate facilities to kids in very, very rough, underserved areas. And they've been doing it. I mean, they started in Afghanistan. They've expanded to Cambodia. They've expanded to South Africa. They're expanding to Jordan. And we've done a few of their projects, of their openings, of their schools, and it's magical.
All right, last question now, Tony. Accomplished people tend to ask themselves questions, and there tends to be one overriding question at a given point in time. Considering your level of accomplishment, what is that one question for you right now that you find yourself asking over and over again?
Will this resonate? And is this good for skateboarding? I think that's probably the number one question for me in terms of what I do with my career and how I spend my time. Does this represent skateboarding well? And is it fun?
I think that mindset is a big reason why you're looked at as the ultimate ambassador for the sport. You always have that art form in mind, and you're very conscious of that with the decisions that you make and the things that you try and do as well. So congratulations on all the successes up to this point. Man, I am excited for people to get to go to ACL Live at the Moody Theater this Sunday night at 7 o'clock. It is Dark Slides and Secret Tapes, and even with Tony Hawk and Rodney Mullen, going to be sharing stories or maybe some video clips that are going to get shared as well, and it's no doubt going to be a great time. Tony, thank you so much for the time today, man. Really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks, Jake. Appreciate it.
Coming up, I am going to talk a little bit of sports, specifically college sports. No, not Caitlin Clark. Plenty of other people have done a great job of talking about that story. Congrats to Iowa for making another Final Four. I will be talking about the NCAA, and there's some estimates as far as what that financial reckoning might be for the antitrust lawsuits that they are dealing with right now. And oh my goodness, is that a big number? Right here on Sports Day Plus.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
I have a couple of updates to get to from college sports, specifically the NCAA side of things. Not the NCAA level, but the actual organization responsible for maintaining a level of control over the sports that it is most responsible for. Of course, the biggest cash cow for the NCAA, it's no longer college football. NCAA is barely hanging on in college football and should be dropping out altogether in the next couple of years. It is March Madness. And even though March Madness is a huge financial windfall for the NCAA, what it makes this time of year may not be nearly enough for what is being predicted that the NCAA might owe once a number of these antitrust lawsuits that the NCAA faces, once those fines are fully realized. And there are some estimates that are starting to float around now. This is from NBCSports.com or Pro Football Focus, one of the two. For decades, the NCAA and its member institutions have used the outdated concept of amateurism to deny college athletes the opportunity to get fair compensation for their skills, efforts, and sacrifices. And now the USA Today says that pending antitrust lawsuits could create a total liability estimated to be over $5 billion. This is based on a most recent item that will likely tack on $900 million to the current bill. This latest potential item of recovery comes from a class action lawsuit seeking academic achievement payments to athletes going back to the 2019-20 school year, led by former Oklahoma State running back Chuba Hubbard. The damages, when trebled, which is something required by federal antitrust law, could reach $939 million. This is just part of the chaos that the college system has earned with years of plain sight antitrust violations, according to this article. They've used the umbrella of the NCAA to grossly restrict the benefits available to students who help make billions as athletes. And it comes at a time when the current custodians of this clutter, of this mess, are hoping that Congress will give them a silver bullet to return to the tables. But the system is busted. That's the point here. And the NCAA continues to operate years behind the reality of what we currently face. And there's no better example of that in terms of news that's come down in the last week or so than NCAA President Charlie Baker, who was hired, I want to say it was about a year ago, because he had legislative experience, former governor of Massachusetts. They thought he might be able to work both sides of the aisle enough that you could get federal legislation passed. The problem is that the NCAA, through the schools and their athletics departments, are insisting that college athletes, we're talking about football players and maybe basketball players here, aren't employees of the university. Even though in that same breath, it is being asked that collectives and team-wide NIL deals fall under the umbrella of the athletics department. The money can't be coming from one place, and then you insist that that one place is not the employer of those that is paying for their services. But that's the insistence here. But in the last week, Charlie Baker sent out another strongly worded letter urging state lawmakers to ban prop bets on college athletes. Is the timing coincidental with the NCAA tournament going on right now? No, it's not. But this does feel a little bit like a bit of virtue legislation, or virtue lobbying is maybe the better way to put it. You see, all of these professional and collegiate sports have to show the general public that they understand right from wrong when it pertains to betting. But here's the issue for Charlie Baker as he fights this battle again. How many years behind the times is he, or just how aloof is it altogether? When you look at the breakdown of the percentage of college-based prop bets on the overall total coming in, and also the number of states that have fully legalized college sports prop betting, it's kind of like an environmentalist fighting to ban plastic straws. There are bigger fish you could go after here, that you should be going after here, that might make a larger impact. But gambling on college prop bets, college player prop bets, it makes up like 1-2% of all bets coming in. Now, Charlie Baker would have you believe that players end up getting threatened on social media and otherwise when their prop bets don't hit, which may be true. People making these threats are oftentimes colossal losers who wouldn't come close to whatever the threat is that they're levying out. But I got to call a little bit of BS on that too, quite frankly. Yeah, I understand. People say ugly things on social media. Show me the legitimate threats. All of them. And I will reconsider that stance. But for right now, Charlie Baker, he's basically just trying to get a W. But again, a handful of states are the only states that allow, that fully allow college prop betting to begin with. So what are you fighting here, Charlie? What are you trying to get done? Most states have already adopted something along these lines. Are you just trying to go for that W? If so, it's sad, but considering how many L's your organization continues to take, sometimes day after day, certainly week after week, month after month, year after year, and how your importance has almost completely faded from the most important college sport, that being football, you're running the risk right now of mishandling the business asked of you by these schools and by their athletic departments to the degree that you may find yourself on the outside looking in for all sports at the highest level. That likely being the Big Ten and the SEC when things are all said and done. It's just amazing to watch the NCAA continue to go through these motions. And I get that they've been pushing legislation for about a year now, to no avail, again, because of the contradiction in place with what they're requesting. And any person with half a brain pointing out, yeah, but you, the money coming from this organization for what is essentially full-time work, yeah, there's going to be some liability in place. So you saying that they're not employees, like, it's cute, but it's also unrealistic. And maybe most importantly, unrealistic when put through the rigors of the court of law. That's where it gets dashed immediately. All right, it's not all doom and gloom in this segment with college sports. I did want to bring you an ESPN.com story that is essentially college football future quarterback power rankings. So what the future of quarterback rooms look like in college sports. And you're not going to be surprised if you're a Texas Longhorn fan, but Texas finds themselves very high on this list. Number one is Ohio State. Number three is Oregon. Number four is Georgia Bulldogs. And number two is the Texas Longhorns. From this ESPN.com piece by Adam Rittenberg on why Texas is number two. By the way, their 2023 ranking was number seven. Returning starters, Quinn Ewers. Quarterbacks on the roster include Ewers, Arch Manning, of course, redshirt freshman Trey Owens, freshman Cole Lord, and senior by the name of Joe Tatum. Sorry, Joe, I don't know you better than I do. But here's what Rittenberg had to say about why the Longhorns quarterback room is the second best futures-wise. Steve Sarkisian has long been viewed as an elite quarterback coach, but his ability to affect the position as a head coach had been somewhat in doubt until last season. Ewers, a former ESPN number two overall recruit, blossomed under Sark in 2023. He had 3,500 yards passing, 22 touchdowns, and 6 interceptions, while completing 69% of his passes and eclipsing 300 yards against Bama, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State in the Big 12 championship game, and Washington in that college football playoff semifinal. Ewers, who entered college by reclassifying for the 2021 season so he could attend Ohio State, has played two seasons in Austin and bypassed the NFL for one more season with the Longhorns. He'll enter fall as a bona fide Heisman Trophy candidate and a contender to be the top quarterback for the 2025 draft. Last season, Arch Manning and Malik Murphy backed up Ewers, and it seemed unlikely the Longhorns could retain both. Murphy, who backed up Ewers the past two seasons, entered the portal before the college football playoff semifinal and landed with Duke. Manning, ESPN's number five overall recruit in the 2023 class, completed 2 of 5 pass attempts in 2 games during his redshirt season. His year two progress will be under the microscope, but he's poised to lead Texas offense in 2025 and possibly beyond. The Longhorns signed ESPN four-star recruit Trey Owens in December and have a commitment from KJ Lacy, the number 52 overall recruit for the class of 2025. So things looking good right now, Longhorn fans, overall in large part because that quarterback room seems to be as healthy as it's been in a long, long time. All right, real quick, before the commercial break, wanted to provide some programming notes. Speaking of Longhorn sports, Longhorn football, tomorrow is Wednesday. That means I'll be speaking with Justin Wells of Inside Texas and InsideTexas.com. And that is the first of two guests tomorrow because my second guest, not going to be surprised by this, it's a comedian, but it is a legendary comedian. George Wallace has been in comedy for nearly 50 years. He's going to be at Cap City Comedy Club this weekend. I'll talk to George about that illustrious career. And more coming up here on Sports Day Plus. Up next, though, it's Where Are We At in Society. Got several stories, including a guy with a very unique name and a criminal record.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Final segment of the show means it's time for
Where Are We At in Society today?
That's right. It is your regular look at stories that show we as a people are headed in the wrong direction. Very occasionally, I will bring you a story that provides a sense of optimism that has us all saying to ourselves, hey, maybe we as a people are starting to figure something out. But sadly, today is not that day. Now, I don't know if this next name that I am about to talk about is this person's birth name, but it is still an incredible name nonetheless, even if it was legally changed to this, and that might make it even more impressive because some jackass chose to name themselves this. But a guy in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Just got in a little bit of legal trouble. Legal trouble involved an incident with a gun in early March. The guy is a 42-year-old local, and his name is D's Nuts Kroll. D's Nuts Kroll was arrested following an incident involving a gun on March 5th at around 10 p.m. When officers got to the scene of the alleged crime, two people were brought to a squad car and placed in the back. Officers also took D's Nuts Kroll into custody, and he was reportedly standing outside with no shirt on. Not a shock. The guy's with the name of D's Nuts is standing outside shirtless in Wisconsin in early March. The complaint says that D's Nuts Kroll appeared to be highly intoxicated. Also not a surprise with a guy with that first name. But he did follow officers' commands. It's always mentioned that authorities identified Kroll by his Wisconsin ID card, which does in fact say D's Nuts Lee Kroll. You might be asking yourself right now, D's Nuts Lee Kroll. Is the nuts in the Lee, is that middle name? Is it D's Nuts first middle name? Lee's a second middle name? Kroll's the last name? Well, according to this story, it's D's Nuts Lee Kroll. So the first name is D's Nuts. Middle name Lee, last name Kroll. You care less about the middle and last name and more about that first name. The two people who were originally brought to a squad car said they were arguing with D's Nuts over the phone around 8 p.m. About 2 hours later, they found the door to the residence was locked. One person said that D's Nuts opened the door and punched them with a closed fist in the shoulder. This led to a physical altercation, according to the complaint. At one point, Kroll allegedly got a gun. Authorities later took the gun into evidence and found out it was a CO2 BB gun. Nice. It was reportedly loaded and had 8 silver 4.5mm BBs in it. When authorities interviewed D's Nuts, they claimed that it was apparent he was talking in circles. Throughout the official complaint, D's Nuts was referred to by his first name, D's Nuts. Kroll is charged with battery, which is a misdemeanor penalty that is punishable by up to 9 months in prison, as well as disorderly conduct and use of a dangerous weapon. Also a misdemeanor that could mean up to 90 days in prison, but it could be increased by 6 months due to having a dangerous weapon. I do have to ask, does having the name D's Nuts in prison work for or against you? Because I could see that going either way. Either way, Kroll did have his initial court appearance on March 6th. A bond was set for $1,000, and he'll have to be back at the courthouse later this month for a status conference with no additional information provided at this time by Green Bay's CBS affiliate. So, CBS Green Bay, thank you very much for this very unique story. The story's not unique, but the guy's first name is, and I feel like we're much more likely to get a story from a guy named D's Nuts along these lines than a guy who is, oh, I don't know, curing cancer or at the forefront of advancing artificial intelligence or making any sort of general positive impact on society. I guess you could argue that being at the forefront of developing artificial intelligence swings it in a different direction. He is much more likely to be a deviant, a criminal, a degen at best. And this story proves as much. Moving on now to a polarizing figure on social media. Libs of TikTok is the social media name of a woman who has been ruffling feathers on the left and garnering support on the right, really going back to the start of COVID. And she has just taken to her Twitter account to call out Southwest Airlines for allowing a, quote, massive obese guy to encroach on her seat during the flight. Chaya Raychick, I guess, is her actual name. The account on Twitter has more than 500,000 followers. Vented about the travel experience over the weekend. Quote, I'm sitting on a flight squished into the corner because this massive obese guy is taking up half my seat, she complained. I paid for a full seat, not a half a seat. She did provide a photo showing her seat neighbor's right leg invading her personal space, which it 100% is to looking at this picture. His foot is literally under the seat back in front of her. So it's going under the space that she normally has reserved for her bag or maybe her feet. And his leg is well over that dividing line that is demarked by a separation in seat cushions. Libs of TikTok pointed out that this dude is violating Southwest Air's own policies. It's not normal or fair. If you don't fit in one seat, you should have to buy two seats, she said. Now, Southwest Airlines does have a customers of size policy, known by some as the Fatso policy, which was introduced last year, which allows overweight customers whose bodies, quote, encroach past the armrest of their seat to request a second or even third seat free of charge. But it requires you to say, hey, I need a second or third seat free of charge. If you need a third seat, I'm sorry, you need to be paying for at least a second seat, if not all three. Because at a certain point, it becomes a safety issue where that extra weight has to be accounted for, especially on smaller airplanes, to make sure that the plane itself is balanced out. If you are taking up three seats, get a grip. You have to recognize right there that there is a problem and make that change yourself and not force others to suffer. In terms of a personal space violation, and let's be honest, there's probably going to be a little bit of an odor that comes with that too. Now, Libs of TikTok did follow the initial post with more photos and posts during her in-flight ordeal. Quote, dude was also stuffing cheeseburgers and fries down his throat and threw his trash on the floor. Disgusting, she said, while sharing a photo of an empty Burger King soda cup resting on the floor between her and her fellow flyer. She later revealed that the carrier contacted her in response to her online laments. They offered her a $150 voucher towards a future Southwest flight. How about a free seat on the next flight? A la your fatso policy, Southwest. Let her not have to worry about a neighbor encroaching on her. Maybe give her a couple flights worth of those. A $150 voucher? Come on now. Libs of TikTok did call that gesture, quote, worthless. I'm never flying Southwest again, and even if I would, that's not nearly enough compensation for this. I've flown Southwest three times in my life as a last resort, never again, she said. Well, Southwest, you may want to re-examine this. This is a problem. You feel bad for somebody, truly, I know I'm joking around right here. You feel bad for somebody who is dealing with these sorts of weight issues, even though oftentimes it comes down to lifestyle choices that they have made. You also need to look out for those who do take care of that business and make sure that they're not so heavy that they require two seats to fit them on an airplane. Last story now. Boy, do I love a good scientific research report that seems pretty see-through in terms of who financed it and just how big a pile of BS the research itself is. But let's go ahead and read the headline. Chocolate could help with weight loss and prevent Alzheimer's. Weight loss and Alzheimer's preventative? Well, sign me up. Let's look at the details. A chemical found in chocolate has many benefits for the body and brain, according to a study from a university in China that was published this month in the Journal of Functional Foods. Oh, boy. Look, I'm a believer in functional foods and functional medicine, but you got to be careful when you see that label slapped on anything. The chemical found in cocoa beans is anti-inflammatory and is high in antioxidants and can protect the brain from Alzheimer's. Scientists also said that this chemical can counter the impact of high cholesterol levels on memory and cognitive function. It can cross the blood-brain barrier function to potentially boost brain function as well as mood and fight against depression. Not only that, but the study also found that it could help you lose weight because this chemical also helps the body break down fats. Yep, there you go. Eat as much chocolate as you want. No, that's not really what's being said here, but a certain amount, or at least taking this chemical in supplement form, might be able to help some of those things out. Good job, Big Chocolate. Nice bit of propaganda there. All right, that is it for another edition of Sports Day Plus. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'll be back tomorrow at 6. In the meantime, have yourselves a great rest of the evening and hook 'em.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Ellie.